Black Leviathan by Ben Counter. Chapter 1. Where the enemy thinks himself strong, show him weakness. Where he thinks you weak, show strength. But beware all such perfidy, for every general may fall prey to believing his own lie. Codex Astartes.
We keep our secrets, some of them even from ourselves.
The man who spoke had not removed the helmet of his power armor. His livery was jade and black, with the stylized image of a dragon on one shoulder pad. Dense patterns of swirls and dots covered one greave and one forearm, giving the impression that they meant something that could only be deciphered with an understanding of their intricate code. In the dim light of the Polar Defiance's map room, ebon eyepieces glittered in the faceplate.
So I understand, said Captain Davinius. What little I have been told of your chapter emphasizes that above everything else. But the Ultramarines share their counsel with their allies, and I expect you to do the same. Sergeant Cianoa, is that correct?
It is, replied Cianoa.
Have you been briefed on our mission?
The destruction of opposition to Imperial occupation in the city of Port Memnor, replied Cianoa bluntly.
Well, that is one way of putting it, said Davinius. He tried to read some expression from the other Space Marine's body language, but he found none.
It was the custom among the Ultramarines to remove the helmet of one's power armor when addressing another Space Marine away from the battlefield. Perhaps this Cianoa's chapter did not share the same custom. Or perhaps he was reminding Davinius that a space marine of one chapter could not assume the subservience of another. He decided to give Cianoa the benefit of the doubt for now.
I would rather avoid destruction as much as possible. Port Memnor is an imperial city and one which has been loyal to the Emperor's rule for thousands of years.
One that requires subjugation, now the alien has its claws into it, replied Cianoa. This ship has orbital bombardment capability, not equal to the Exterminatus, but more than enough for our purposes. You realize, do you not, that this mission could be completed in a matter of minutes with the push of a button?
This mission, perhaps, replied Davinius. But the occupation that follows will be 10 times harder. The casualties among innocent civilians will set the population against us. The Imperial Guard would have to garrison the city in force if we were to use the spaceport. And that is manpower the war for Agrellon cannot afford to spare. We will do this my way, Sergeant Cianoa. The Ultramarines' way. With honor and respect for the people whose Imperium we serve.
You are in command, Captain Davinius, said Cianoa.
And Davinius was sure both men understood how little that meant.
We are 3 days out from Briseis, said Davinius. I need full mission parameters drawn up by then. It is time you saw the prisoner.
Both Agrellon and its near neighbour, Briseis, as far as any could tell, were settled during the scattering at the same time. That ancient migration of mankind across the stars to every edge of the galaxy had placed on Agrellon and Briseis colonies of humans that could not support themselves on an alien world. Both colonies had collapsed and reverted to the savagery that now prevailed on countless such worlds across the Imperium. Agrellon had rebuilt its society and come to prosper. In the age of the Imperium, it was a hive world, a vast population supported by many layered cities devoted to industry. The tracts between the cities drained of resources, so the planet had to be fed by nearby agri-worlds. Briseis had stayed barbaric until thousands of years after Agrellon's urbanization, and only comparatively recently, over the last 2,000 or 3,000 years, had the imperially founded city of Port Memnor become the capital of the planet's population and society. Then, the Damocles Gulf War had come, The second conflict over that reach of space between the Imperium and the Xenos. And Agrellan had found itself the front line.
"Open the shutters,"
came a voice piped in over the voxcasters. Two crewmen cranked the handle that raised the shutters covering the viewing windows, revealing the inside of the cell. The brig on the Polar Defiance resembled a dungeon of sweating steel, cold and functional, its locks and doorways hand-operated and mechanical to keep the place secure in case the power failed. Even the light came from torches burning in sconces on the walls. Inside the cell was a single figure crouched on the floor, its long limbs folded up around it. The bed and ablutions vessel were the only furniture in there with it. Even before its face became fully visible, its proportions were clearly inhuman.
"I've faced the Greenskins a dozen times," said Davinius's fellow ultramarine brother Sergeant Thaxos. "Tyranids, too. Huge bloody monsters that would tear your face off without knowing you were there. This thing doesn't look like much of an enemy."
Thaxos wore the white trim of a veteran on his blue power armor, his dark and battered skin broken by the studs of silver implanted on his forehead to denote the length of service he had given as a sergeant of the Ultramarines. Davinius was well aware that Thaxos was older than he, and yet Davinius was of the higher rank. Thaxos served as much as an advisor to Davinius as the sergeant of his command squad. When Davinius had been told that he would have only one squad of Ultramarines with which to prosecute his mission, he had chosen Squad Thaxos.
"An enemy need not hold a gun to threaten us," said Davinius. "More than most, this one's weapon is cunning and lies."
"Only weapon," replied the alien, "is the truth."
Its voice was dry and sibilant, like the shifting of sand. It unfolded its long arms and legs and stood. It had been given a crewman's blue jumpsuit to wear, the arms and legs of the jumpsuit barely reaching its knees and elbows, but hanging baggily around its narrow shoulders and chest. Its face was far too long compared to that of a human, with an elongated, hairless cranium, two huge, pure black eyes, and a thin, wide mouth. It had no nose, instead breathing through a slit that ran from the middle of its forehead to level with the lower edge of its eyes. Its skin was blue-grey, though in the cell it had become paler and duller.
"First one I've seen in the flesh," said Thaxos. "Not sure what the fuss is all about."
The alien put a hand against the toughened glass wall of the cell. It leaned forward, peering at Thaxos as if he was the prisoner and the alien was the interrogator.
"The first step is to think upon what you are," it said, "and what you are permitted to be. When you comprehend the gulf between them, then you will turn to the greater good."
"They can't stop," said Davinius, looking back at the alien, "even when it is in chains."
"I speak only what you know is true,"
the alien replied. Thaxos drew his combat blade. Its monomolecular edge flickered in the torchlight.
"Would you like to hear my reply?"
he said. A shutter on the wall behind Davinius rattled open, revealing Sergeant Sianoa. Two of his squad were with him, and their armor showed the same tangles of symbolic designs, though less intricate than the sergeant's.
"A living Tau," said Davinius, indicating the alien. "Not so rare in itself, but this one is of their diplomatic caste. The water caste, they call them. These are not so commonly taken alive."
"Where did you get it?" asked Sianoa.
Even with his face hidden beneath his helmet, his disdain was clear. No, thought Davinius, not disdain, not the contempt a space marine should feel for the Xenos. It was a detachedness, like that of a scientist examining something on a slide or performing experiments on something he had long since stopped thinking of as a living creature.
Inquisitorial agents brought it out of the Chrono Rites district of Port Memnor, replied Divinius. It's a Tau emissary, primed to create sedition and defection among Imperial citizens. Its low Gothic is perfect. It has knowledge of Imperial history and institutions, too. They have been watching us, these Xenos.
What has it told us?
All about the greater good, said Divinius. And about how a space marine can become all that his emperor intended him as a part of the Tau Empire.
It does know what we are, said Cianoa.
If they don't know now, they soon will, said Brother Thaxos. The Raven Guard and the White Scars are fighting them across Agrellon. They'll have to learn a whole lot more about the space marines if they want to take one of the Emperor's worlds from us.
We will not take anything, said the alien,
which had not flinched even to be confronted by five space marines.
Agrellon will join us as surely as the day comes to join the dawn. Its people will decide your battle, not your soldiers or ours, and they will choose the greater good.
What is this greater good? Asked Cianoa.
Whatever benefits the Tau, said Divinius.
Thus do small minds speak of it, interjected the alien, when they do not have the strength to understand.
The corruption you have brought to Agrellon means millions of people will die, retorted Divinius. That does no good for anyone.
Would that the greater good could exist without conflict, and that all would walk into its embrace without resistance,
said the Tau, its voice almost hypnotically level.
But it is a good greater than the lives of those who must be lost to see it become reality. It is worth the bloodshed. It is worth anything, for it is to the betterment of all.
Their fire-caste warriors are on Agrellon fighting for its hive cities, said Divinius. But on Briseis, this is the enemy. Words and lies. Already Port Memnor has been compromised, and there is no way we can guarantee its safety for Imperial use if we do not weed out the Xenophile faction first. That is the mission for which we have been chosen. We are stretched too thin to take Port Memnor and the spaceport by main force, so we must do it with guile and swiftness instead, with our two squads and a devotion to honor and victory. That is why I have shown you this alien, Sergeant Cianoa. This is our enemy, not the people of Briseis.
Cianoa regarded the Xenos for a moment longer. The alien finally fell silent and backed down when confronted with Cianoa's eyepieces, as if it could see through to the pitiless face underneath.
What will you do with it?
Cianoa said at length.
Keep it, said Divinius, as long as it is useful.
When it learns what befell its brothers on Briseis, said Cianoa, it will envy them that the end came so quickly.
At an invisible signal, Cianoa's two squadmates marched out of the brig, the shutter clattering down behind them. Divinius pressed a control stud on the wall, and the shutters fell down over the cell walls too, and the alien was hidden from view again.
Jade dragons, said Thaxos,
an impressed note in his voice.
I never thought I'd see them in the flesh either.
The defense laser batteries surrounding the spaceport of Port Memnor could not be trusted. They were ostensibly still in the hands of the Imperial government of Briseis, but every strata of the city's society had been compromised by the Tau watercast emissaries, and it was too great a risk to bring a spacecraft within reach of them. If the Polar Defiance attempted to make low orbit to drop transports that could land at the spaceport, Xenophiles, hidden among the gun crews, could shoot the transports down and have a good chance of bringing the cruiser itself down after them. Divinius, therefore, took his small force of space marines down to the surface of Briseis by shuttle, landing beyond the city's outskirts, a cumbersome way of making landfall without the swiftness and shock the space marines normally made use of, but better than having the mission end before it began in a rain of burning wreckage. The four shuttles made landfall in a forest of cairns, tumbled-down dry stone structures where ancient chieftains and kings were buried. It was a sacred place, a shallow bowl in the landscape formed by the low, shale-covered hills surrounding it, and the course of a long-dried river that had left its chemical stains on the rocky ground. Iridescent blue and green riddled the ground like alien blood trails, weaving around cairns and low tombs of shale slabs. The few plants that found purchase there shuddered in the downwash of the shuttle's retro-engines, flinty shards scattered by the impact as they touched down. Each shuttle disgorged 5 space marines, spread out among the craft to minimize the crash risk. The jade and black armor of Sia Noah's squad stood out against the stony slopes. The ultramarines gathered around Divinius as he jumped from the gunmetal shuttle and set foot on the planet Briseis for the first time.
"Cheerful place," said Brother Thaxos as he jumped down behind Divinius. "Lovely view."
"A place the people of Briseis made their home for tens of thousands of years," replied Divinius. "They were nomads before the Imperium founded Port Memnor. They followed the seasons and came by here once a year to bury their dead."
"You are quite the historian, Captain."
"I read my intelligence, Thaxos," replied Divinius.
"I'm amazed the sky didn't drive them mad first," said Thaxos, looking upwards.
Briseis had a breathable atmosphere, but it clung to the world in a thin and precarious layer. Light from the system's star did not have to pass through the many layers of gas and dust of a deeper atmosphere, and as a result, the sky was permanently the black of the void, scattered with stars and including the hot bright diamond of the Dovah system's sun. A ghrelin itself hung among the stars, the blue-green of polluted oceans blooming out from continents as grey as ash or brown as dirt, blistered with the radiating black tendrils of the planet's hive cities. On the horizon, past the slate hills sharp as knives, rose the spires of Port Memnor. The generatorium exhaust towers spewed grey smoke. Between them, the wider squat coolant towers, rippling heat haze up past the stars. Hab towers and communication masts were dark grey against the black. Somewhere below that skyline was a nest of xenophiles, heretics who had forsaken the Imperium of Man in favor of easy answers promised by an alien. Divinius's duty was to root them out, and the demand of his honor as an ultramarine was to do so with a minimum of violence to the innocent and loyal who made up the majority of the city's population. Divinius took out the Orspec scanner and activated its screen, displaying the many maps of the city that Imperial intelligence had provided. He selected one of the outskirts, a tangle of sewers and processing plants that siphoned off the byproducts of Port Memnor's industries.
"See you, Noah,"
Vox Divinius, and the Jade Dragon's sergeant approached.
"I will take my men to the entry point immediately. I suggest you enter the city by the southwest gate and make your way to the southern transportation hub. From there, you can get to most areas of the city quickly."
"I would take the fight to the xenophiles," said Sianoa. "It is not the way of my chapter to wait in reserve for the enemy to make his move."
"This operation will be conducted my way," replied Divinius, the tone of his voice aiming to cut off any argument. "You have your orders, Sergeant."
Sianoa did not reply, but turned back to his men, and with a gesture, set them off on the quick march towards scree-sloped hills and the port city beyond.
"I don't like him,"
said Thaxos over the ultramarine squad vox, watching the jade dragons blend in and almost vanish among the rocks of Briseis's wilderness.
"Do you like anyone?" asked Divinius.
"There are some I tolerate," said Thaxos.
The ultramarines were already moving, heading for a cleft in the hills. The trickle of a foul, effluent river glittered there, a mix of industrial chemicals. The river's source was the processing district of the city, where the ultramarines would enter Port Memnor.
"In through the bloody sewers,"
said Brother Merovos, who carried the squad's plasma gun in its sling at his side.
"Well, that's what you get for being the saviours of mankind," said Thaxos cheerfully. "You have to cover yourself in ordure before you can cover yourself in glory."
"Conduct yourselves like space marines," Vox Divinius sharply, and the squad moved off towards the city.